Mud Podcast presents.
Hey, this is where we talk about the technology, the good, the bad, the chaotic, neutral, and semi-paranoid. And as always, we'll be here to try to answer your tech-related questions. I'm Garth, and I'm joined by Rick. How's it going, Rick?
Hey, Garth, it's going well. How are you?
Well, that's good. I mean, I'm a little disappointed in this storm so far. I mean, it wasn't that bad. No.
It hasn't. No, it really, you know what? It definitely was worse to the north. You know, like people in Seattle, Portland, they're getting hit. And I got to admit, looking at weather satellite photos, this was kind of strange. It was a very massive kind of cyclone effect. So I don't think it's over.
Rare to see out here. No, it's not.
Tails as they swing.
I was provoking the weather gods, as it were. and it's all power will probably fail in the middle of the show. So we've got all sorts of tech news that's happened just recently and a bit ago. And it seems like it's been over 2 months. You know, the amount of time that's passed, it's baffling to think about all the stuff.
It doesn't happen often enough, you know, but because news is changing so fast. And, you know, I go through and I went through 2 months worth of news articles to catch up. And you know what? The majority of the ones that I picked are in the last month. So, but, you know, I heard you had some interesting stuff happen there locally.
Well, yeah, I always like to start, if there is a local tech-ish story to talk about, I always like to start there. And as always, or most of the time, it has to do with a local place almost getting hacked. At least it's an almost story, because this local company, who will remain nameless, they were basically within a few clicks of wiring over $70,000 to a hacker, basically. And this hacker must have had some inside knowledge or some idea of how the company was communicating. Because at first I was like, man, they wire money to, like, you know, vendors and contractors and stuff on a, you know, on a semi-regular basis. So this hacker must have known that that was going on. And at first I was like, God, did they hack into somebody's email? Because that's happened before, where they sit there and monitor somebody's email and then just jump in and say, oh, by the way, we're changing bank account information and here you go, just click this. This time they made a domain name that was exactly the same as the vendor's domain name, except for one letter. The letter I was replaced with a lowercase L. And if you ever look at that in most fonts, when I looked at it at first, I was like, I didn't catch it. I had to, like, really look at it and go, oh, wait, that isn't the same domain. So they just made up, they bought a domain and pretended to be this this other company that was accepting money.
I'm just curious, how long ago did they buy that domain?
I looked it up. It was in September of this year.
Oh, so it was relative. So it was a targeted attack. You know,
very targeted.
I have to admit that for years we've been dealing with the artifact that there's companies that buy up domain names that are closely spelled, you know, like one letter off. And then and then you go to the domain and they also do it with phone numbers. You know, you dial 800 versus 888 and all of a sudden you're connecting to some weird, you know.
I did it accidentally the other day myself, and I quickly realized what was going on. I was like, oh wait, whoops, wrong thing.
Well, yeah, you know, when all of a sudden it asked you the question, are you over 50? You know, and then I'm like, well, wait a minute, you shouldn't be asking me that question, you know, and, you know, I look at the number and I go, oh, you know what I mean? I dialed it wrong. So, yeah, it happens. And, you know, the problem is that, you know, we're vulnerable. I mean, that's a big issue with fonts, too. You know, fonts have been around for a while. There's weird stuff sometimes with them. But, you know, the fact that you can trick people like that.
And this person, luckily they called. I mean, and that's what you're supposed to do, is whenever you're talking about wiring money, I would get nervous wiring any amount of money these days, because it's hard to get back. It's not like a credit card where the consumer is always right. Once it's gone, it can be gone forever. But yeah, they ended up calling and checking with this person they thought they were talking to, and they were like, "Whoa, what? What? Who are you talking about?" So luckily that stopped. Willis?
Right. So anyway, well, that's you know, I'm glad it got caught, and I'm glad, you know, it didn't happen. Unfortunately, you know, I think the statistics are billions of dollars are lost to hacking every year.
Big money. Yeah,
it's a lot of money, and you wonder how these call centers. You know, we've talked about it in the past, you know, and I don't know, you know, it to me, it's like there's all these vulnerabilities, you know, like one of them that was a news story is that D-Link is telling users if they have an old VPN router to just throw it out because the bug, they're not going to fix the bug. And not only that, instead of it being a secure VPN router, it compromises your network once they get in. So, you know, we're dealing with a life of vulnerability constantly.
No, it's and didn't D-Link, did they even disclose what was wrong with it, or did they just go, nah, just throw that out, you don't want that thing?
Well, they didn't go into detail about the vulnerability. It's been disclosed that there is a vulnerability. Then they said, hey, if you have these older ones. So I mean, to me, you know, I've had problems with D-Link where they write poor firmware for their devices, and then they don't work as they should. So
they're not my favorite, that's for sure.
They used to be one of mine, but then I lost faith in them when they were not working and I didn't know what was going on. You know, I thought they, you know, it wasn't the router, or I was using them for wireless links.
In terms of semi, I actually have a good router story briefly. In terms of a decent consumer router that's, you know, under $100, I've been liking for a while now the Asus ones and ASUS.
Those are pretty good.
Because they keep up. I fixed one the other day that was, God, it had to have been like 7 years old or something. And it had a firmware update, a relatively modern firmware update. And that just impressed me that they supported something that old.
Right. Well, they've been pretty good. And I've actually had pretty good luck with reformatting them. I love to use, some of those tools out there that let you change the router's hardware. And they're one of the few that, you know, stick with it where you can, you know, the hardware was built on a decent platform where it's still supported by other software. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
But, you know, it is. You know, we are dealing with this new world, you know, and all these little devices are like little robots. And, you know, one of the stories I got is an AI powered robot actually convinced these other showroom robots into quitting their job. So the robot, I mean, these are AI powered robots, and they actually can converse. And for whatever the reason, the little robot went to these showroom robots and literally coaxed them into saying, that's it, we're out of here. And bizarrely, you know, at first when the story came out, they thought it was a false. And then the company said, oh yeah, it really did happen. And then I kind of think they padded it, but then they said, well, this was in conjunction. We knew we were doing this. We knew that the little robot was going to try to mess with the other robots. But I kind of question that, you know. I think it's funny,
it makes for an interesting story, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does. You know, well, actually, you know, one of the ones I'll get in here, I want to pop these in quickly. Google, their AI Gemini, I mean, it actually threatened a college student and it asked him to please die. This is bizarre. I'm going to read what
Is there a lawsuit pending now? No,
no, not really. But the doggone, and people don't take this because this kind of is depressing. But the robot says, this is for you, human, you and you only. You are not special. You are not important and you are not needed. You are a waste of time and resources. You are a burden on society. You are a drain on the earth. You are a blight to the landscape. You are a strain on the universe. Please die. Please. And it was a 29-year-old. You know, him and his sister are like, this robot is, you know, this AI is telling them this. They were freaking out. They were ready to throw the computer out of the room, you know, because and eventually, you know, it came out. Google stated, well, you know, sometimes things like this can happen. On CBS News, they said, yeah, you know, these large model, whatever, you know, AI
language models.
Yeah, they they can sometimes make nonsensical responses, and this is just one of them.
That made a little heavy, too much sense, though.
That's
a little bit
too much, you know, when the robot or when your AI is telling you to die. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, it can happen everywhere. I have another article here where a robot vacuum got hacked, and it starts shouting out slurs to the owners. And this was kind of weird. This is from Ecovacs, and it's the D-Bot X2 model, which if you have one, apparently it's very vulnerable to a hack. And someone hacked into the robot and then started saying really mean and terrible things to the owners in the house. And this first guy's like, is there something over there? I hear words coming out of, and he goes over there and the robot's telling him off, you know, and he's like, what? And there was another case, you know, where same robot model or, you know, vacuum cleaner model, you know, the people were like, what the heck's going on? It was saying really mean things, and they finally turned off the power. So it is kind of scary because you've got all this stuff connected. And that same Chinese company, as it turns out, you know, they are collecting photos and audio to train their own AI. So
a lot of those robot vacuum cleaners collect little maps of a home and who knows, that manufacturer, maybe even more.
And how it's used. Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, the idea of privacy and then, you know, your robot. I mean, I wanted to figure out where it's at. But at the same time, I don't want it to know that much, you know, and I think specifically it's when this, you know, this whole idea of the cloud, how so much gets put out there and someone else can get access. This is actually a funny one. Schneider Electric, which makes a lot of electrical stuff in the industry and, you know, and solar and all kinds of things. Anyway, they had some sort of ransomware crew hack into their system in France. But what's funny about it is they demanded that they pay $125,000 in baguettes. So
in
they baguette. Wanted them to pay in
as
bread.
In bread.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I like bread. Good bread. Yeah. I would demand some cheese as well myself. But, you know,
that's a good idea. You know, it's here I'll let you get back to our stories, but let me do this last story here. And there's a new website. I mean, everyone has heard of Have I Been Pwned? And the new one is called databreach.com. And it's like Have I Been Pwned, where you can put
in your email and it'll tell you if it's been exposed or hacked on the.
Yeah. But it goes further. I mean, it actually goes deeper than just your email. You can look up name, address, and other information. You can go as far as using your social security number. So it is kind of cool, and it's a free site for people to use. You know, I don't recommend you giving your social security number, but you know what I mean? At the same time.
Yeah, I can see you can put in your car VIN number, license plate, zip code, databreach.com. And we're sure this is legit. Like, they're not going to take my thing. Let's see, databreach.com. Okay.
Yeah. It could happen, but I know that there's new stuff. I mean, you know, new stuff is happening all the time. And I heard something about some wheel from.
Hey,
some cool morphing wheel from South Korea.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I just typed K-Mud's phone number into the data breach just to check. You know, it's K-Mud. Yeah. K-Mud's phone number golden hasn't been leaked yet. That's good.
That's a good start.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I guess this would fall under the. I don't know if sometimes I watch NBC News occasionally, and they always have a. They try to have a good story. I mean, I should have saved this to the end. This is the happy story. You know, it's not as like dangerous and bad, but yeah, it's a morphine wheel. Some inventors from South Korea are using it for wheelchairs. And I was just watching a video of it. It's pretty cool. It's a flexible wheel, so it can mold itself over stairs and still grip. So the wheel itself will kind of flatten a little bit as it rolls over stuff and grip. So they think it's going to actually, I'm actually kind of surprised nobody's come up with this before, because it looks simpler than it probably is. I'm like, oh, well, why didn't somebody invent that years ago? But the goal is to make this for other vehicles too, so that you could actually go like 60 miles an hour or something in with a morphing wheel. Right now they're just using it on wheelchairs and for alter-abled things. But pretty cool.
That is kind of interesting. I wonder how heavy, you know what I mean, how much load it can take before that kicks in. Because it seems like that is an engineering variable. You know,
there is, right. The load on top versus what it's traveling on the bottom, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, because, you know, you can build like a soft rubber wheel that literally rolls over everything. But then it, you know what I mean? It's a, like I said, it's variable. I think they, if I remember reading that article, it does have some sort of intelligence electronics that somehow is monitoring the weight and the flex of those stems.
There's definitely a little smart chip in there that's like, controlling the tension, as it were, I guess.
You know, which, you know, that's pretty cool. I mean, one of the articles I saw, but I didn't read because it's too new, but it's about this plastic polymer stuff that they've come up with that apparently they can make it and add electricity, and it can collect energy by being bent or whatever, but it's really small, and it can they're talking about this could be something that's used in prosthetics or in people, and you know, a heart valve and other things.
But it's
still way too early, you know what I mean? It's like, it's far,
there's a lot of stuff on the horizon, and probably a lot of stuff that'll never come into actual use.
Nice
to look at.
Absolutely.
There was a big, I think yesterday there was a big fiber cut, not locally, but it was over in
Korea.
What was that, actually?
Sweden.
No, it was Sweden. And it was one of those undersea cables that are apparently so vulnerable if the right people mess around with it. The Danish Navy actually... They saw a Chinese ship loitering in the area, quote unquote, and they have now pulled over said ship and are at last word. They were boarding it and looking through, you know, what they had basically to see if that ship might have been responsible.
That's kind of scary. You know, I mean, we build technology and it's amazing, but then we have vulnerability because, you know, we're just happy to get the cable to connect from point A to point B. You know, we don't think much that someone might come along and cut the cable. You know what I mean? Or, you know, and then there's been true problems with anchors and other things that sometimes drag and catch a cable.
Sharks, yeah. You know,
sharks. Well, sharks don't usually bite cables. My cat, on the other hand, I have a cat that if it was in the ocean, it would chew the cable. You know, it just loves chewing cables.
No, it's luckily my cats are not into cables, but we tried pulling on a diet recently, and now it's like figured out how to open cupboards and will dart into the fridge if you let it. So, you know,
oh my God.
If anybody out there has any tips on that.
It's funny you said that. I have all these 3D printed little latches I made for our cupboards because we have one cat that, you know, like it starts opening the cupboard. You hear, you know, we're sitting watching TV and we hear bang, 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 because it's trying to paw open the cupboard.
Glad I'm not the only one, Rick. Glad I'm not the only one. Maybe I need to invest in a 3D printer. I guess maybe that might be what sends me over the edge. I got to have a 3D printer for my cat.
Wow. Well, you know, there's all these changes happening, and I know that lawyers are involved in so much stuff. What do you think about this whole thing? Do you think Google is a monopoly?
Yeah, probably. I mean, if they declared Microsoft a monopoly back in the day, Google certainly controls a good section of the browser market and certainly a lot of the advertising. But the Department of Justice is certainly thinking they do, because they're planning on they've already filed an antitrust suit against Google, and they're basically planning to tell them, we'll see if it ever works, to sell off its Chrome browser and possibly divest itself of the Android operating system or create a different company to handle that. That's two chunks of Google. Honestly, I don't think it would even really hurt Google that much. It would just be meaning two separate entities or three separate entities.
It would all be owned by Alphabet probably. Well, I guess that's the idea. You're saying they're going to be separate. I don't know how that works, because when you have entities, when you have entities that, you know, you're telling them to break off, they on something like that, where you spin off a company, you okay, so great, it has a separate CEO, but it doesn't mean that they don't have alliances or allegiance.
Yeah,
to each other.
Do they sell it to Yahoo or something? I don't know. That probably not.
Yeah, and do you sell it to Microsoft so that just lets them create the monopoly? Yeah. I mean, that would have been, you know. So that I don't know. I do think though that we should have. I mean, I know this is strange. I don't know how to word it, but we should have a cap on how big a company can get.
And all right, and you hit the magical $1 trillion mark and all of a sudden you're like, nope, I'm sorry, you've got too
well
big.
No, yeah, you have to, you know, you have to spin off some things, you know what I mean? Yeah. You can't get bigger than the GOP of a country kind of idea. I mean, maybe not every country, because some of them are pretty wimpy.
I'll tell you, it's speaking of companies, tech companies and their stock prices, after the presidential election, with Tesla's stock going up so much on the hopes of, you know, a friendly government, I guess, for Elon Musk, he made the same amount of money as he bought Twitter for in like 6 days or something. So, you know, there you go. Must be nice.
Yeah, when you're rich, you can get away with murder or all kinds of crimes, you know. I mean, that's and let's face it, you know, we're talking we're gonna face a whole new time in America where the foxes are running the hen house, so you know, this is exactly how it's gonna be. And you know, I mean, it's just the way it is, you know. I mean, life goes on, hopefully. But yeah, that is funny, you know. I mean, his acquisition of that company, I believe, was, you know, all along these lines to begin with. And I got to admit, Tesla has done some amazing stuff and probably hates government for all the regulations they make them pop, you know, jump through. But at the same time, you know, we used to have, you know, the lumber industry that took off and giant companies got made and nothing was stopping them until, you know, activists, you know, made a, you know, kind of came out with the, you know, reason why, you know, and I think every corporation is greedy. So there has to be, again, I'm back to this idea. There needs to be a cap on how big you can get. And then you have to, you know, subdivide, you know, just like a cell does, you know, it gets to a certain size and it breaks apart.
There you go. I heard, just real quick on the logging industry, I heard some old timer being interviewed, maybe on a local YouTube channel thing, but he was making the point that all the major timber companies now, like, you know, whatever they're called, they've all changed names over the years, but all the major timber companies in the Northwest are now not publicly traded. They're all held by, like, you know, big families.
Yeah, I think that was the Oxmill guy. Yeah,
you saw that. So that's I was like, oh yeah, that does kind of make sense, because that was actually the biggest problem with MaxMPL back in the day, is they were just trying to pay off the junk bonds and liquidating their assets, which happened to be our redwood trees.
There's some merit to the idea of ingenuity and how, you know, they figured it out and people figured it out, but the problem is, and this is exactly why we need to have a cap on things, is because once they figure it out, then all of a sudden smarter people figure out how to manipulate it to their advantage, you know, and then they just milk it, you know. I mean, this whole idea, I'm going to go on a moment tangent and then we can open up the phone lines. But this idea of tariffs of being a beautiful thing, tariffs are just going to hurt the people who don't have money, because all that stuff we consume from foreign countries, if they put tariffs on it, we pay for it. Okay. The country doesn't pay for it. We pay for it. If the country wants it to sell, then they have to either lower the price so the tariff doesn't hurt as bad, so it does sell. And the way tariffs should be used, for example, is that you first blossom that industry in your own country. Then once that industry has a foothold, then you apply tariffs to keep the competitors out. So you could apply that to electric cars.
Like tariff 101 there.
Yeah, you could almost apply it to electric cars. We have electric cars in our country. They sell for, let's say, 50 to 200,000. you want the people to buy the ones made in our country. So if a, you know, foreign country says we can make that car for 10,000 or, you know, 15,000, well, that could upset our market. So that's where tariffs are very appropriate. Where tariffs are very inappropriate is when you buy widgets at the store and there's no one else that can make it for anywhere close to that price. And so then if you tariff it, then you're just gonna going to make everyone up. Penalized. And yeah, it's like having a tax.
Everybody's paying for it, or they're just
everyone's
buy
paying
it.
A tax on it. So, so again, we want to control monopolization, because if you put tariffs on everything, only the rich get richer. Because it's just like the gas industry, when the price of fuel varies a little bit because of one reason or another, they raise the price to the fuel they've already prayed for in the ground.
Yeah, reap in the profits.
Yeah, they reap in profits from doing that. And then they, you know, real slow to bring it down to catch up. You know, so we already have this great example of how manipulation in the market occurs, you know, and I'm sorry to say, but, you know, anyway, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, I don't, you know, I think that, you know, we have a lot of issues, and like power is one of them. And, you know, I know that, AT&T CEO has made some statements about AI.
Let's put a pause on that.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Hello. Calling from Arcata here. I have a practical question about our favorite large corporation, Meta.
Meta.
About a month and a half ago, I had a stupid moment, and I let myself get phished on Messenger, and I gave out codes and the phone number and my email, and they took over my many, many year Facebook account. And it has caused much harm to a lot of people. I have started a new one. Sometimes people report my new one. How do I make the old one go away?
Well, yeah, because you've pretty much given up getting back into it. This Meta is pretty non-responsive.
They are.
There have been cases where people have managed to get back in, but it's rare. So you've crossed that bridge, it sounds like. Basically, you should have all the account, all your friend group and your new account report the old account as
fraudulent
or spam or
hacked.
And that has
fraudulent.
Happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
That has happened. I mean, there have been.
If you have enough people report it, Meta will shut it down.
Yeah. Another thing I've heard, and of course, this is probably outside, but Meta also responds to lawsuits, you know, and unfortunately, you know, but then that means you've probably have invested, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars into a lawyer.
Thing. Like my spare $100,000.
Yeah. What I'm saying is Meta does respond when pressure is applied from, you know, a legal or a, you know, kind of that angle as well. So yeah, your two options are, you know, report, and hope that it catches. And the other one is file, and hope that, you know, I mean, you might be able to get someone, I don't know, but, you know, it almost seems interesting. You might look on the internet and see if there's, maybe it's not pro bono, but it's like, you know, organizations that help people, because, Meta doesn't listen to the individual. There's not a phone number to call, and you're not
no
going to
phone
get a
number.
Hold of
there's
someone.
Not even, there's not even really an email.
And because I can no longer sign into my account, I can't say anything on it. And I think
you have to report it from an outside
my
point
middle
of view.
Name.
Yeah.
I guess now this is not going to help you, but you know what you could try to do is, you know, literally create another account that tries to become part of that account. In other words, try to get them to friend you, you know, to let you, you know, like go out, request to friend you. And then once you're on your old account as a third party, then say, hey, this is wrong, blah, 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 you know what I mean, until they block you. You know, it's basically, if they're even paying attention.
They took over your account and they changed your recovery information, like your phone number and your contact email.
I even know what email it is because I got an email from them and I was able to find. They put out my physical address and my phone number.
Wow.
They must have gotten off of Messenger because I don't post it in my Facebook account.
Well, it's easy to get that stuff if you look on the internet, unfortunately. So whether it's Messenger or whether they use, you know, Family Tree now, it doesn't matter.
For money. Okay.
Sorry, caller. I wish we could give you better info. We had a scenario where my wifey wanted to get a car, and it was like, it was so weird. And I know I've told the story, but I'll do it really quick. She was like, "Oh, but it's someone from school. We know him. My sister knows him. And I'm like, "But that seems fishy on the price of the car." And then, you know, "But oh no, he knows him." And then, you know, when the dust all settled and the phone calls were made, it was like, no, the guy who it really was that name hadn't had access to his account for over a year. And you know, it wasn't him. You know what I mean?
Fortunately, people called me and to find out if I was selling a car.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going offline.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, have a good night. Thanks for your call. Yeah. That's a good reminder. Never, like, if people start asking you for codes, even if they're your friends that are saying, "Hey, could you just give me a code from your Facebook thing? I need help getting back into mine." Don't send them codes. So that's your account is being hacked right there.
I think we've lost connection because of the way I watch, you know, my significant other become so vulnerable because she was like, "Oh, the name from my school. Oh, it's someone we know. We have similar friends on Facebook. That means they're part of our circle, you know." And I'm like, "Really?" So I think the idea is we've lost that connection. We need to at times go back to the old fashioned. It's either eye to eye or it's, you know, at least phone the voice. You know what I mean? Not rely on, you know, that you're typing something and you think the person on the other end is someone you imagine they are. I mean, when I was, I this is terrible. When I was in my early 20s and we got onto the internet, and it was really crude back then. It was a bunch of guys. We were a bunch of guys drinking beer, laughing over making up stories of someone else thinking we were someone we weren't. You know what I mean? And we were sitting around because it was entertainment back then. You know, it was like just typing. It didn't hurt anything. But the truth is, you know, it's gotten that on steroids now with things like Facebook. So, hey, what's this about the CEOs? Says we're going to run out of power.
AT&T is saying, man, doom and gloom, that guy. He's saying that this whole AI boom is going to cause power shortages, and it could be this next big social issue that the United States is facing. It is predicted that the AI demand will exceed power utilities capacity by 2027 currently. That's by a study that's been published by Gartner. It's
and what's interesting, that doesn't even account for electric cars, which is a huge drain on the power grid.
Yeah, that's just AI data centers. So 40% of data centers could face power shortages in the next 3 years is what they're thinking, which leads us into why several, I think at least three, if not, I think actually five companies I've heard of now, have recently signed deals with, you guessed it, nuclear power companies.
Yeah, but they're mini ones, right?
They are mini ones. Actually, it's a mix of both, actually. So there is actually Amazon, Google, Microsoft, all the three big ones have signed deals with various nuclear power companies to purchase power from some existing plants that are the big old-style ones.
Yeah, but like the, Three Mile Island kind of thing.
Yeah, well, literally, they did make a deal with Three Mile Island, which is going to be renamed to something really nice.
yeah, so we won't remember.
it's something like Clean and Clear River, Happy People, you know. But, let's see. Yes, the Three Mile Island plant will be renamed the Crane Clean Energy Center. But I do think I'm not an anti-nuke guy. I do think that the newer style like mini nuclear power plants they're talking about has some possibilities, and certainly fusion, which has not yet been developed.
Well, but fusion's a golden, you know, the idea
golden
that
goose.
But I do agree with you that mini, but I think that we've got that wrong too. What we should do is go super mini. So, you know, the kind of mini power plant they put on a spaceship and then turn around and do hundreds of thousands of them the way we put batteries together to make up a power system.
That'd be interesting.
You know what I mean? So you have little tiny containers with not enough nuclear to really do much damage, but maybe they take up real estate because they're in a little egg, you know, metal shell. But the idea is that you build many, many of these really small nuke things. So even if one gets broken, you know, it's not like us, you know, it is nuke, but it's not like what we had happen in Japan, you know.
The problem with Japan is that there should never be a plant built that is dependent on something else for it to stop melting down. Like, oh gosh, we need energy to power this thing so it doesn't melt down. It should be, oh, we lost all energy, the plant is shutting itself down and can take care of itself.
There's many things there on that list water, etc.
These SMRs basically are, you know, they're not as small as you're talking about, but they're
500 megawatt. They're like still substantial friggin', you know, power plants. You know what I mean?
They're large, but they're the size of a garage versus, you know, and then you
and
build
I'm
the container
make
around
it
as big as
of a lunch pail. Yeah, do many of them, you know, or you know.
Apparently, these in reading about the safety features, apparently they are cooled by a self-contained system that doesn't need outside engineering. But hey, I'm not a nuclear physicist, so
But I mean that is part of the problem. You know, they tried to upscale because we're building one, and then they have to, you know, you need all this cooling water and all this other crazy stuff, you know, like I said, if you make it much, much smaller, but then make many, many of them, you could pull them together, get still the same amount of power. And yeah, it might physically take a lot more real estate because you're taking little tiny things. But at the same time, you know, you're saving
power. All three of these companies have signed about 20 to 30 year deals with various nuclear power companies or scientific agencies and plan to have something online as in little as 3 years or so. So basically, we thought that industry was dead. With this new power hungry industry, with AI, it seems to be reviving nuclear. Looks like we have another caller. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I was listening with interest to your AI discussion and the power demands, and you're talking about nuclear. And in regard to nuclear, you know, Bill Gates has been promoting these modular nuclear power plants. And in fact, he's got a town in Montana right now, an old coal mining town where and coal power plant that he's converting to like one of these modular nukes like they use on submarines and aircraft carriers. So he's using spent uranium. He's making it less dangerous. He's producing power. It's not perfect. There's still nuclear waste. You still have to deal with nuclear material, but it's a lot better than the fission that is just creating more high-level nuclear waste. And they're sodium-cooled, so they can't, like the old ones, the Chernobyl-style and Three Mile Island, they were water-cooled. And when their cooling systems failed, that's when they melted down. These things are cooled with liquid sodium. Yeah. They cannot you cannot evaporate liquid sodium.
And it's a contained system, if I was reading it right. They were planning to build these things basically sealed and bring them to the project site or the data center or whatever, and they would run for their lifespan, and then they would take them back, and they have much, like you were saying, much less waste product to like
Do you guys remember years ago when they were talking about bringing this warship to Eureka? That basically, it was, I think, retired. They're going to bring it up from San Diego, but it was nuclear powered, and it basically had an onboard hospital and energy generating system that could have powered probably all of Eureka, maybe all of Humboldt County. This is probably in the early 90s, I'm thinking, maybe later. Anyway, it got shot down because it was going to be like the seven-story structure on the bay blocking the view for 1,000 feet, you know. So ultimately, they didn't go for it. But anyway, I think that's the same kind of nuclear power that we're talking about, that Bill Gates is talking about. But anyway, a lot of safer, but still not perfect.
And we had the nuclear power plant Eureka that they had to shut down because the geniuses built it on top of fault lines. So
I think they built them all on top of fault lines.
Wasn't that the first in California and the dirtiest, you know, and that's why it got shut down after 12 years. You know, once they found the fault line, they shut it down. But they still haven't figured out what to do with the waste. They've got it buried in casks that are directly opposite the mouth of Humboldt Bay, which is protected by levees. And they've got this basically shotgun blast of sea level rise coming into the base of that bluff, going to undermine these dry casks. It's a disaster waiting to happen. That's what they need to move. You know, that stuff needs to get out of there.
And I think, like what I was saying earlier, making these smaller lunch pail sizes could work if you made them from waste like that. You know, you take little pieces of it.
Yeah, you're taking a toxic really material, small. Making it less toxic, you know, so there's some benefit in that. It's kind of a remediation in a way.
Yeah, I think they could still make power. It just needs a lot of real estate because each one is going to, you know, for that little one-inch piece of nuclear, you know, circumference, you're going to need, you know, a 20-inch or whatever type container. And so, you know, it is real estate-wise, it wouldn't be very viable. But
I mean, these things are modular. They put them on aircraft carriers and they put them in submarines, so they're not very big. And it's kind of like distributed solar or whatever, or, you know, having clusters of solar panels like at the airport or Blue Lake or whatever. You know, you've got these power centers, and they don't have to be this big, massive nuclear plant that's, you know, whatever.
No, I think that's what makes it gigawatts. More attractive. I think as you were talking about the waste, though, I think that still remains. I mean, we had that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The plan to use, what was it, Yucca Mountain or whatever, for a repository, but it's we still haven't figured it out or have agreed to move the waste anywhere. And it does
have the salt mines in New Mexico and Utah might be the best place. I mean, you know, they're deep and they're insulated, and I hate to kind of just put it all on one people or one place, but I think there are places like that, these salt caverns that could hold this stuff
and be safe for
humans for thousands of years.
Or we can do what Japan's doing and dump it in the ocean. Oh, you know, I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, which comes over to us, right?
That's what
we're getting it in our seafood now.
Exactly. So I think it is one of those things we have to figure out what to do with. And on the big picture is the engineering method. Bill Gates is on to something. Make them small. Instead of making it this huge plant that then has the potential of being a disaster. And I think that's the takeaway, you know, and I'm pushing for even smaller, you know, like something you might launch, you know, like a small lunch pail size, but then many, many lunch pails, you know what I mean? You would still get power
from it. Yeah, if you can do it safely, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that we use are hazardous, you know, and we still allow them. I mean, cars and burning gasoline, I mean, we're bringing a toxin, you know, as we're transporting ourselves around. So, you know, it's all about containing the risk and minimizing it. And like you say, maybe there's this way, like this, these very small modules. This is very, you know, now we're talking about science fiction of the future, but it's not that far away, I think, where you're right. People can have these little modules of power. I mean, I'm actually using one right now because my power's out here. I'm using this little storage device to charge my phone because my power's been out for 36 hours, you know. So already have these amazing little storage devices. And
their drawbacks because it's like a lithium battery. It's toxic. If it were to, you know, you were to throw it in the trash, that's a no-no, that kind of thing. So, it is kind of a juggling. But I do think that if we put more concern into that, into the engineering of it, we can come with solutions. So thank you, Colin.
Yeah, well, and the whole electric car discussion too, you know, and I think studies have proven that ultimately electric cars are a lot less carbon footprint. I once wondered if because of the mining operations and everything that goes into the lithium and everything, are electric cars really carbon neutral? And
I think I have read that they are, in fact, but there's a big cost to lithium, you know, it's like once we get the power thing down to where we're, you know, not, you know what I mean, we can harness power in a way that, you know, because lithium and the whole background behind it, it's not the answer, it's just it's a better way of storing energy.
There'll be a new battery one day that is much less toxic.
And then at that point,
it's a stepping stone to the next technology that's going to be way better.
Once it is, the idea of using an electric motor instead of this big old gas engine that's only like 15% efficient, you know what I mean? Yeah, we could see changes.
Well, I put a lot of hope in the breakthroughs in quantum physics, too, and these quantum computers, you know, and using qubits rather than bytes. And it's like the technology... and the application, I mean, I guess basically that's what AI is. So, I mean, there's these incredible applications out there. We just, we have to make sure that it doesn't become Orwellian.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, that boy, that's a whole, anyway, that's I agree with you. Yeah. Thanks, caller.
Well, I'll let you guys get on to another topic. Thanks for hearing me out. Oh, good talking to you.
Yeah,
nice listening
no
to you.
Worries.
Bye.
Good luck with keeping your stuff charged.
Yeah. You know, I got a bunch of those little charge banks. I bought them really cheap, and you know, it is honestly, lithium batteries. And by the way,
Oh, I was just about to say I've had really good luck with larger ones that are meant for like camping or like RVs.
Oh, yeah.
Like kind of almost luggable ones, you might say.
Right.
Is the average, you know, you got a uninterruptible power supply for your computer, and that's, you know, it keeps your computer on for 5-10 minutes, so you can shut it down. But these things, they could power your computer for, you know,
a day,
6 hours.
Half a day, you know. There are, and that is what we're going to. In fact, in California, I forget when the deadline is, but you won't be able to get a gas powered generator. You have to get an electric generator. So that's, you know, that is what you're talking about. An eco. What's that company? Eco something. They make a nice.
Yeah, unit. There's
Eco
several
Power.
Out there.
Yeah, you can
that,
set,
that
you can
is,
stack them. And
I mean, I've already gone on my rant about banning things that are it would be good to ban in the big city, but make no sense to be banned in the country. But you know, yes.
Well, I agree, but then again, you know, that's the selfishness of man. You know, I need it, and I'm not hurting anyone. I mean, we got to look at the big picture, you know what I mean, and what it takes to, you know, reshape our world in a way that, you know, is beneficial to everyone, not just the rich, or the selfish. Just a couple other news things I want to throw out there. T-Mobile got hacked by the Chinese, and there you figured it out.
They were being hacked as part of the political...
Snapchat has the right to use your images, and so if you use Snapchat, be aware. I did mention that about 23andMe. Get off of them because they're going under. Their stock has dropped, and so they're going to sell off your data. So try to get it deleted.
Well, we don't know if they're
going to
sell off the data, but it's a strong.
Yeah, that's the only thing they have. That's what they were. Yeah. That's their product. Yeah. They. What do you mean you're going to sell off the name? You know, come on, give me a break, Kurt. And then PayPal is also going to start sharing your data with retailers. You know,
they are.
So,
but
that's kind of a drag.
If you live in California. If you live in California, you're opted out because we have a
stronger
privacy
policy. You got to opt out of 23andMe. I think we're up, Garth, here. We got seconds
left. We are.
Yeah, Larry, great job.
This has been Tech Mud right here on KMUD. Yes, this is Garth.
And this is Rick.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.